Today we're going to talk about the artificial pancreas, the biggest advance in the area of type 1 diabetes. My name is Steve Edelman. I work at the University of California, San Diego, as does my colleague, Jeremy Pettis. We both have type 1. We both got it when we were 15. I'm just a few years older. And we both have a huge interest in type 1 diabetes. And this is our good friend and colleague, Ed Damiano, who is definitely one of the leaders in the development of the artificial pancreas. Ed calls his project the Bionic Pancreas, named after his biceps. We're going to talk about what's going on at the ADA, bring you up to snuff, and then talk a little bit about the Bionic Pancreas, which is something that Jeremy and I are really excited about. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Let's talk about the artificial pancreas and let our viewers know, what it is, briefly, where we're at now, and then we'll get into some more specifics.
Sure. And just a little bit of background on me, actually, I'm a dad of a child with type 1 diabetes. So my son was diagnosed by my wife, who had been a pediatrician at the time for just a year. He was 11 months old, and he is now 17 years old and will be going to college in a mere 15 months, not that I'm counting.
Thank you for reminding me. Mm-hmm. And when Ed started this whole project, he said he's going to do it before his kids go to college. Now, we had an idea, Jeremy and I. If your kid could flunk out of high school for a couple of years.
Just one.
You might be able to reach that goal.
Just need 12 more months.
The bottom line is...
A gap year. That's why they have the gap year.
the bottom line is you can talk about all the immunotherapies, islet cell transplantation, encapsulated islet cells that Jeremy's working on. But this is here and now, and I think it's something that is... the most exciting thing, and so we're glad to get together with you.
Oh, thanks, guys. So, I think of the bionic pancreas. By the way, we use the term bionic pancreas mainly because we think it's a more descriptive term. Artificial pancreas tells you what it isn't. It isn't a real pancreas, but the bionic pancreas tells you literally what it is. It's a device that imitates the pancreatic function. In this case, the endocrine pancreas. Through electronic devices and electromechanical means. That's exactly what it does. It's a body-worn device. This is actually the one that we built. And it's a technology, in our case, that infuses both insulin and glucagon, or insulin analogs and glucagon analogs. And it's got a built-in continuous glucose monitor. I'm wearing a sensor right now, a body-worn sensor. And I do that just for demonstration purposes. But the sensor sends data by way of Bluetooth communication right to the Bluetooth radio in our device. We have all these mathematical algorithms that we've developed over the years that take that glucose information every 5 minutes and make automated dosing decisions, therapeutic dosing decisions, on a 5-minute schedule to determine just precisely how much insulin or glucagon to administer through subcutaneous infusion sites. So at the surface of things, it kind of looks like an insulin pump. But of course, it offers so much more because it adds a new technology.
This looks more like an iPhone, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, this one does. In fact, I like to carry with me the old iPhone, the original iPhone from 2007. Because, in fact, we actually call this device the Islet, in homage, of course, to the Islets of Langerhans. And it's about the size of that original iPhone, a little bit thicker at 17 millimeters thick versus 11. But basically, it's a device that is not a cure, but what it does is it achieves glycemic control that is near normal levels. So you're achieving near normal glycemia in people with type 1 diabetes. But it does so across the board. It's very effective in people who have high blood sugar levels, people who have good control. It's a leveler, and it asks very little information about you, just your body weight to come online, and then it adapts insulin and glucagon dosing every 5 minutes.
Yeah, so a lot of the data is out there with, lowering A1C and reducing hypoglycemia, but as two people living with the disease, I'm curious about just some of your anecdotal experiences, what people say when they're on the bionic pancreas. And I remember you saying that in one of your studies that you're trying to recruit patients, they, within 24 hours, you had everybody you needed. It's like a, selling out a concert, in 20 seconds, So what are you hearing?
Billy Joel was 45 minutes, so.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to compete with that, but I would say we do have a long waiting list because recruitment actually has not been a problem.
Yeah.
The challenge has been turning people away, which is a good sign and a bad sign, I guess, but it is really encouraging. The support we've gotten from our volunteers is unbelievable. And we simply could not be here within 12 years of research and animal studies first, and then the past 8 years clinical trials, inpatient setting first and now outpatient setting. But we just get this, it's extremely passionate desire to help move the needle on diabetes care. And this is a tremendous community to do that.
The reason why you don't have any problems recruiting is because Jeremy had called a no-hitter, is going 24 hours, staying between 80 and 180.
That's hard.
And it's impossible.
It's almost impossible.
Yeah. It really is.
And it's such an unmet need, staying in the zone. Now, I thought you might talk a little bit about what's going on in the field of AP, because as most people don't know, you know, you're one of the few folks that are really using glucagon to help prevent lows, and insulin, obviously, to prevent highs, and using a special algorithm. Other folks use just insulin alone. Right. And don't forget the hormone amylin. Of course, you know, a tri-hormonal pump might be a little too aggressive right now to try to try. But what's going on with that area?
Yeah. So I see all these technologies really as there's a spectrum of capabilities of these devices, all of which are going to improve the standard of care. So these things are not in tension with one another. They're complementary. And we see these technologies as being rolled out over the next 24 to 48 months. And one will be better than the next, with the ultimate goal being to bring a fully bi-hormonal system that's fully automated to people with type 1 diabetes as essentially a bridge to a cure. So it's in that sense, what I mean is it's a device that will take care of people as long as it's necessary until there's a biological cure, which is what we all are looking for. I mean, we don't want to be connected to contraptions and having to change insulin and glucagon cartridges. But some of these other devices that we're expecting to see as soon as within the next 24 months, we'll do things like, or even 12 months, even sooner, within the next year, we'll see some technologies coming out. Medtronic has a technology coming out which will modulate the basal infusion rate. And it'll increase it and decrease it as the sensor dictates it ought to, up to a certain extent. But it's not a fully autonomous system. The user will still have to know their sort of nominal basal rates, and they'll have to program the pump with that, and carb to insulin ratios and correction factors. So it'll look very much like an insulin pump, but it'll have this new functionality which will give much better control.
Little baby steps, you know.
They're baby steps, but they're close together. Mm-hmm. Baby steps that take 10 years in between, that's not something we embrace.
You know, you mentioned Medtronic, but, you know, Animas is also in the game. Tandem's in the game.
Yeah, Bigfoot Biomedical.
Dexcom is partnering. Mm-hmm. So that's good news for us.
Yeah, it is.
Competition. Competition is good for people with type 1. It's good for it's just good for the ecosystem.
Yeah.
And each of these various companies, some of which grew out of, you know, parents of kids with type 1, some of which grew out of just the academic curiosity that tested these algorithms in early studies, have then spun off companies. And they all have sort of different takes on this. And the reality is, when it comes to things like glucose, it's actually quite a very personal matter. And how you wear devices, whether you want a tubeless pump or a tube pump, the kind of sensor you wear, a sensor that's indwelling for many, many months versus one that you change out frequently, these are personal decisions, and you need to have lots of different choices. We're building a platform technology that we hope to have allow you to use all the different kinds of insulins you need, potentially different glucagons, but certainly different sensors. So we want to make sure that this is a device that appeals to as many people as possible.
Yeah. You know, I'm just thinking, I'm excited about it, just again from the mental burden kind of side of it.
Yeah.
The calculations that Steve and I are doing constantly of, you know, did I exercise earlier?
Yeah.
A lot of times. You know, you're high, you're low, and just taking away some of that burden.
It's
you know,
huge,
and again, I like from the publication, seeing the A1Cs and stuff, that's impressive, but I'm just thinking about the mental energy
which
that
is a huge
we can
part
free
of it.
Up.
And it goes back to your original question about the subject's response to the trials and to their experience on the device. I mean, prior to having this fully integrated device, the system predates this, its predecessor, ran on an iPhone. It talked to two Tandem T-Slim pumps and had G4 Dexcom. And it was many parts, and it was a cumbersome thing. But it took away the emotional burden of day-to-day management of type 1 diabetes. And they said, I would hook up to this thing in a minute and wear all this garbage. Yeah. You know, this will be much more appealing, but much more palatable device. But I would say that many people just didn't want to give the device back.
Yeah.
That was a common reaction.
So, you know, let's fast forward 10 years from now, and your product's out there, people are doing well with it, maybe there's other products on the market. What other kind of occupation do you think Steve and I should look for after you put us out of a job?
Well, now, wait a minute.
Think about it. If people are staying in the zone all the time, and my practice is primarily type 1, mm-hmm. do you think I should look for a job at Starbucks? Jeremy's thinking about at a Supercuts. not as a hairstylist, but someone sweeping up the floor.
So I got to say that it will certainly change the patient encounter, right? In positive ways, I think. You won't be focusing on the frustrating part of type 1 diabetes management, which is not a matter of patient complying with therapy. It's a matter with the it's a matter of therapy being able to adjust itself to constant physiological change, which is really what we're talking about. Maintaining a teaspoon of sugar in your blood all the time is an absurd and impossible task.
Yeah.
And we're tasked with it nevertheless. And the three of us around the table, I help my son manage his diabetes. I've been doing that since infancy. Not my infancy. And and you guys managing your diabetes for all these years.
We share our blood sugars. I'm a share
I'm sure you do, right?
He gives me so much crap.
It's like a Fitbit fight, right?
Yeah, it's a competition. Exactly. But I just wanted to say, though, that what you mentioned about the emotional issues, the physical issues, it's really the unpredictable nature of type 1.
Yeah.
But I wanted to, as we get ready to close... what about the safety issue? Are you concerned about, with your system, you just put in your weight, and that's it. It learns on its own and adjusts over time. And, people always say, gee, well, it's like, are you really going to trust that Tesla? Take your hands off the steering wheel when it's on the freeway. Mm-hmm. How trustworthy is it and how safe is it?
Yeah, so the best I can do to answer that question is to report back on our clinical trial results.
Right.
So we've never had any severe hypoglycemic events. The kinds of adverse events we've had usually are associated with the infusion set failing. All right. Of course, the most concerning one would be a sensor telling you your blood sugar is higher than it actually is.
Sure.
And so that's always a concern, and it's my greatest concern. But like the infusion set failing scenario, just like a pump, you would replace it. The difference is you're not on the hook for figuring out how to bring yourself down from a blood sugar 400. You change the infusion set, and the device does that autonomously.
We call that a rage bolus.
Mm. Oh, we have all that. This device is mathematically objective. Has no opinion about the matter, makes no judgments about you.
And that's key.
It is
because
so
like
key.
Steve said, it's hard not to be emotional.
It's,
you see that
it's
300.
Patient. It's a patient device.
Yeah, and the thing that this does that our current technology allows, if you wear a pump, you put in your blood sugar, and it suggests a dose for your correction factor, but it has no clue on what direction your blood sugar is going or how fast it's going.
Right.
And that's where the algorithm comes
that's
into
right.
play.
That's right. Now, this device, I should emphasize, is I was talking about sort of the incremental steps from insulin only to bihormonal. This device is really three devices in one. It's a bihormonal bionic pancreas, but all the mathematical algorithms and the cartridge detection system we've built into here are always looking to see are both cartridges installed. And if you only have the insulin cartridge in, the device behaves fundamentally differently. It sees there's no glucagon cartridge and it behaves a little more conservatively. It's an insulin only system.
I didn't know that.
And this device will come out first, hopefully within about 24 months, as an insulin only system. And then a year later, the glucagon cartridge becomes available or so. And you
Same
load that
device.
In, it'll see it. And every 5 minutes, it's looking for the glucagon cartridge. It's infinitely patient. It's a device.
Will it tell you what time it is of the day it is, too?
It does do that.
Yeah.
We thought it was a little over-the-top sophistication, but we did add a clock. And finally, it's also a glucagon-only device for post-bariatric surgery, hyperinsulinomas. So there are going to be populations that benefit from this outside of type 1. And, of course, type 2 is immediately on everyone's mind. Probably won't need the second hormone, but as an insulin-only system, it could work quite well, we suspect, in that population. There's a lot of low-hanging fruit that can suddenly be tested like this.
We have an appointment to apply for a job at a car wash. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
we could talk all day on this.
Thanks,
you
really could,
Yeah, that's awesome. And so we'll be waiting.
Okay,
very good. Thank you. Thanks very much for joining us today. Really exciting area, and especially for us.
Yep. Take care.
So long, folks.